Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg from the Herald Times, and today we're going to talk about the stewardship of Indiana's woodlands. Joining us in the studio, joining me in the studio, Mary Catherine Carmichael couldn't be with us today, but joining me in the studio are three people. Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tim Maloney, is here. The wildlife specialist for the Division of Forestry, Scott Holton, is here, and also Christina Glasser mm-hmm. is here. She's an economist and co-founder of Greenfire Consulting. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And welcome to all of you.
Thanks for being here.
I know from my time at the newspaper, which has been quite a long time now, that issues involving Indiana forests bring up a lot of pretty strong passions. It's an issue, one of the big issues that we write about every year, and there are a lot of people that are very committed to Indiana's forests and Indiana's woodlands and what's going to happen to them. So hopefully we'll get lots of calls and lots of emails today as we discuss these topics. The first thing I wanted to talk about is just sort of set the cast of characters here and talk about your organizations. Tim, could you talk a little bit about the Hoosier Environmental Council?
Sure, Bob. The Hoosier Environmental Council has been around for 25 years. We're a statewide nonprofit environmental education and advocacy and research organization, and work on the full range of environmental and energy topics for Indiana, promoting stronger air quality standards, improved water quality standards, protection of our wild places, promoting clean energy sources, and more sensible transportation policies. And we do that work throughout Indiana in front of state agencies, the state legislature, county commissions, and local communities.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty long agenda, and it's probably getting longer with the way a lot of focus is sort of intensified on issues of energy and the environment lately.
Yes, definitely.
So we have a lot to do. Christina, how about Greenfire Consulting?
Greenfire Consulting Group is a group that tries to, you could say, put economic wisdom into decision-making. Mm-hmm. And we start on the premise, and it's our mission, to show that when you protect the environment and protect resources, that this can actually have significant economic benefits. And we were just recently commissioned to do a study on the Wayne National Forest in Ohio. And the theme was an economic analysis of that plan, and we're asked to compare the benefits and the costs that come from it. Just shortly after that, we were asked by the Indiana Forest Alliance to comment on the so-called environmental assessment for the Indiana State Forest. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, we came to the conclusion that the economic benefits that come from those plans are outweighed by the costs that mm-hmm. these plans generate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we can get into some of those mm-hmm. specifics in a little bit. I wanted to ask Scott about the Division of Forestry. You're with the Department of Natural Resources, I assume?
The Division of Forestry is with the Department of Natural Resources.
Mm-hmm. And so what is your main responsibility?
My main responsibility is I'm the wildlife specialist with the division, and I coordinate the wildlife habitat management Forest Wildlife Habitat Management Program. We'll be developing that program. It's a new position, and I'm new to it. And we're currently in the process of developing the program to monitor wildlife habitat availability and suitability on our state forest lands in particular, and to provide information for forest landholders throughout the state. Mm-hmm. I also work on our Hardwood Ecosystem Research Project with a number of universities and researchers throughout the Midwest, and we're looking at some of the different ecological issues associated with timber harvesting and forest management in general in this Hardwood ecosystem.
Okay. There are a lot of places I want to follow up, but we've got a phone call already, and I think it will be a busy day today. But let's go to Fred on the phone first. Fred?
Yes, sir. I'd like to, aside from habitation for wildlife, it seems like to me that the coyotes are the biggest problem as far as, well, we don't have near the Bob Whites we used to have or the rabbits, and it just seems like it's an off-balance nature the coyotes are causing. They're not native to this part of the country anyway. I think they just ought to be removed as much as possible, put a bounty on them or something, because, my cousin had some dogs, and they even run off of one of those. They come in and get them, and I think that they're causing a lot of problems with the wildlife around here. They don't hardly ever hear any groundhogs anymore. I think they're just doing a lot of damage to the other wildlife here in Indiana. The predators are getting out of hand.
Scott, seems like a question for you.
Yeah, the coyote issue is it's one small symptom of a very large issue. It's no secret that land use in Indiana has changed, and in the last 200 years, a lot of people don't know, but Indiana at one point it was estimated it was 85% forested. And so you can see that there's quite a difference now when we're barely getting at about 20% forested. So there's been a lot of changes, a lot of that is at the species level too. We have species like coyotes that are acting as top predators in a ecosystem that no longer has any other top predators. And that has effects on all kinds of other native species and native wildlife as well. So,
it just seems to me like it'd be better just to control them by hunting instead of letting the cow just eat them up alive or whatever. You know, it just the way cows go about killing something, it's pretty inhumane. If you ever, you know, it always on these nature shows on TV, it shows a cow with a bunch of little pups, and they, you know, how cute they are, and those things cause a lot of damage in this area. And it's my own opinion that they, well, it's not just my own, it's a lot of other people's around out in the countryside that just thinks of a coyote as just nothing, but it should have been on the other side of the Mississippi like it should have been. Used to, we had the foxes would take care of it. It was a natural predator, but now we don't hardly see them anymore because of the coyotes.
Okay, Fred, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm going to let Scott respond to this. The overall issue is, you know, natural predators versus hunting to control some of this.
Yeah, hunting is actually a very important part of wildlife management. I leave a lot of the specifics to the Division of Fish and Wildlife. My expertise is in wildlife habitat, particularly forest wildlife habitat. But the effects of hunting or some of the effects of not enough hunting are definitely apparent on forest land and on natural plant communities. I think one of the most obvious issues with that is overpopulation of deer. A lot of effects have been seen on the state parks here in Indiana after controlled hunts were done, the plant communities rebounded, and a lot of the natural species were able to come back. And again, this is a symptom of some of this imbalance that has occurred over the past 150, 200 years. And we're dealing with a lot of these issues now, and we have to deal with these issues.
Tim, I want to turn to you because Scott mentioned the fact that Indiana used to be 85% forested, and now it's more like 20% forested. How have those numbers been trending? Are we becoming more forested, or I mean, has that 85-20 been going steadily downward, and it's continuing to go downward?
Well, the record on our forest cover, as Scott said, we were about 85% forested in the time when the Europeans first started settling America, and as Indiana was settled and agriculture, clearing for agriculture took out a lot of those forests, and we had a very active forest products industry. And we reached our maximum level of clearing around the early part of the 20th century. And And then kind of some ups and downs through the first half of that century. And then since the 60s, our total forest land cover has been increasing. But recent forest inventory numbers indicate that trend of increase may be halting and going the other direction because of principally land development.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, what's the reason for that? Land development by –
It's urban suburban sprawl. New commercial and residential developments are a big part of that.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
Yeah, if I could add to what Tim said, the Division of Natural Resource, or excuse me, the Department of Natural Resources a few years back put out their comprehensive wildlife strategy. And in it, it detailed major threats and concerns and future management and research needs for all different habitat types throughout the state. For the since we're talking about forests here, and we all have some expertise in forests, the forest habitat, the number one threats associated with forest habitats were development concerns and fragmentation concerns from development and agriculture and loss of habitat from these sprawling areas. And this is something that Partners of Flight, which is a bird conservation research organization, has identified as one of the top major concerns for forest species, not only here in Indiana but throughout this whole central hardwood region and really throughout the whole east as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our phone number is 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu. We're talking about Indiana's forests and woodlands today. So if you have questions or comments, please join us on the program. Christine, I wanted to talk again about the economic aspects of this and how you decided to get involved in that.
We are a consulting firm, and we were hired to do an analysis mm-hmm. of, like I said, the Wayne National Forest Plan, mm-hmm. To do an economic analysis. The forest plan states, and this is a requirement by law, that the net public benefits outweigh the net public costs. Mm-hmm. The forest supervisor has to make this statement when they commission a plan. And basically, we were asked to check on that. We asked to see if that's a correct statement. So we were hired. That's how we got involved.
Uh-huh. So the Wayne is a national forest,
right?
Correct. So
mm-hmm.
So in that plan, you said that you found out with that plan, or your opinion of that plan is that the benefits did not outweigh the
right.
the costs, right?
Right.
So go into that a little bit. Explain that a little bit to us.
We analyzed, I could say basically, to give you a nutshell, mm-hmm. in the nutshell, we first looked at budget costs and revenues, which is a very basic measure of costs and benefits. And we looked at what comes in timber receipts, or at least we wanted to, and what it costs to produce those timber receipts. Mm-hmm. Well, the Wayne National Forest Plan does not divulge this information. Actually, that's the same for the Indiana State Forest Environmental Assessment. It also does not give that information. But it's been known from some attempts it was about 10 years ago. For a while, the Forest Service had to create this information and make it publicly available. They had to really show what their costs are and what they get in. And pretty much all the national forests turned out to be losing money on their timber sales. And the reason for that is that it's very expensive to prepare for and deal with the consequences of the timber sales. For example, there's road building, road maintenance, road decommissioning. Then, of course, there are the timber sales themselves. There's timber stand improvements, dealing with invasive species that are the result of timbering, to just name a few things. And when you really do an honest accounting of the costs, those costs are higher than what the timber receipts are that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look just at that alone, this says there's no net benefit. Then we went into another cost category, and this is not a dollar cost, but it's environmental impacts. So there are clearly environmental impacts from logging, and they may not be as big as some other environmental impacts from other human activities, but they are negative impacts on soil, erosion, compaction, impacts on waterways, especially from road building. There are air pollution impacts. The Wayne National Forest Plan, as well as the State Forest Plan, asks for a lot of burning, which impacts the air. One of the biggest problems with forests right now is that they are impacted by invasive species. And logging opens up more avenues for invasive species. And the EA for the state forest states clearly for a lot of species that one of the main threats to them are invasive species. So just these alone show that there are negative environmental impacts. No net benefit here. The third big category is the impacts on ecosystem services. And those ecosystem services are delivered by mature, standing, intact forests for the most part. So when I'm talking about ecosystem services, these are things like the ability of the forest to slow down rainwater. We've had a lot of flooding here lately. Forests, intact forests, large areas of intact forests with multiple layers and old trees in them, they slow down the rain, they filter the water, they make sure that the water is released slowly. This is an ecosystem service from forests, and economists have found a way to estimate what those services are worth. So the way this is measured is that you look at what it would cost to replace that service. So, for example, by building flood control measures. Or you look at the damage that is avoided. And when you add up different ecosystem services and the value of them, they're huge. Mm-hmm. They're like, I think the average is about $1,800 per acre per year. And compare that to the timber value, not even regarding the costs. It's about $250 per acre per year. So there's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So these are the costs. Then when you do an economic analysis, you have to compare the benefits and the costs. So far we have had really big costs, and what are the supposed benefits? Again, there's a lot of parallels between the Wayne National Forest Plan and the State Forest Plan. Both claim that they want to help the Oak Hickory Forest or maintain the Oak Hickory Forest that is in danger to be taken over by maples and beeches. And we looked at the justification for that. The justification is that supposedly there has been a lack of fire and a lack of disturbance. The disturbance is the big word here. But when you look at historically, you can see that the disturbance and the fire were heavy human intervention that happened over probably 200 years, logging and burning that may have favored oaks and hickories. Those oaks and hickories are now about 80 to 100 years old. But the time when the big interventions stopped, which was at the beginning of the 1900s, so they're ready to be harvested from an industry standpoint now. But if you look at what naturally would develop, it would be a more mixed forest that has more maples and beeches in them and other species. And so basically what the Wayne National Forest Plan and the Indiana State Forest Plan suggest is to maintain the heavy human intervention to maintain a forest cover that would not naturally occur. So there's no really good justification for that. The only justification that is brought out is that it supposedly benefits wildlife. Now, it doesn't matter what cover you have, it will benefit some wildlife. You can always make that claim. But from an economic point of view, you want to know whether those species that are benefited are the ones most rare, most deserving, and therefore most economically valuable to society. And where we cut with that is, well, the most scarce habitat, and therefore the species that are most endangered are those that depend on large, uninterrupted forest areas, unfragmented, old-growth forests. These are really, really rare, very scarce. There's practically no old-growth forest in Indiana and in other areas in the Midwest. It's an extremely rare forest type, and therefore the associated biodiversity is also rare. And from that, when you look at those supposed benefits that are really not very clear benefits and compare them with all the costs, that's how we came to the conclusion that there is no credible claim that benefits outweigh the costs.
Okay. Now, I have two things I want to do. One is I want to give Scott a chance if he has anything he wants to add about the habitat and things of that nature. You know, I've got some other things I want to follow up with. But we have to go to the phones first. So that's going to be our first thing because Andy's been very patient. Andy, go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Hi.
Hey, Andy.
Tim and Scott. I'm calling from Paoli. I have a couple questions, one for Tim and one for Christine, and they might both want to address the one part of this. But, Tim, how much public land is there in the state, especially public forest land? And then in light of that, what is the perhaps the proper role for public land? And then, Christine, in light of polling data, including polls by Purdue University and others that show anywhere from 60 to 80% of the public wanting public lands protected from logging, why do these, what are the perhaps perverse incentives that are in place that would cause these agencies to do something that's clearly contrary to what the public that owns these lands, how they would like them managed?
Okay, we should get Andy's ID here because Andy's been involved with forest issues for many years. Andy Mahler?
Andy Mahler. I'm actually associated with Heartwood, the organization that sponsored or commissioned the study that Greenfire conducted.
Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Bob.
Tim?
Okay, Andy's question about the amount of land in public ownership, about 4% of Indiana's land area is in public ownership in the form of the state forest, national forest, state parks, state fish and wildlife areas, nature preserves, city and county parks, some of the Department of Defense lands. So we have a very small percentage of our land base in public land ownership. And from the perspective of the Hoosier Environmental Council, we think that given the scarcity of these resources, that their value is much greater for providing functioning ecosystems and outdoor recreation opportunities that aren't necessarily available elsewhere, and that the commercial activities, be it agriculture or industrial or even, you know, commercial logging, that those are more appropriate for our private land space. And right now that's where we get most of our timber supply is from our private land. So it's a scarce resource. Its best value is for ecosystem protection and for outdoor recreation opportunities, hiking, camping, fishing, hunting, picnicking, all those opportunities that also have a great economic benefit to the state of Indiana. So that would be our perspective on Andy's questions.
Okay. Christine?
Well, Andy asked me to address the question of how is it possible that you have so many people supporting no logging and keeping forests for ecosystem services and environmental protection, but at the same time, there's ongoing logging. And we looked in the Wayne National Forest Study into the incentives that are there for the Forest Service to log, and it's very simple, really. There are two main issues. One is that there's basically an institutional bias in the Forest Service, and I assume it's the same in the state forest, that the people who are hired and who have most of the say, they're trained in forestry, in industrial forestry. And so they bring that professional bias in there. This is what they've learned to do. And they think in those terms and make plans accordingly. The second one is that they get money to do it. So there's basically a financial incentive to keep on doing what they're doing as long as Congress pays for it. And you can see very clearly how this works. When there's money available from Congress to do something, then there's more incentive to do it. There were a lot of forest fires in the West several years ago, and great concern about loss of property and loss of lives. And so Congress responded by making more money available for burning. Well, then there arose some resistance in the West for so-called prescribed burns, which are burns that are done to prevent bigger forest fires. And there was a lot of money available that couldn't be used, and that money was then made available for the eastern forests. And guess what? A lot of Forest Service land and the plans for them suddenly discovered that it's really important to burn, because that would get more money into the coffers and would get more people employed. So we need to keep in mind that there's no evil forces active in the Forest Service or Indiana Forest Division or whatever. But people respond to incentives. It's a very basic thing. They want to stay employed. And if they see a way to have their employment secured by something that they can convince the Congress or the state legislator to do that makes sense to them, they will continue doing it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have to ask Scott, institutional bias, the Division of Forestry?
Well, the Division of Forestry is mandated to protect forests in the state of Indiana and to protect soil resources and all the ecological services that Christina mentioned, air purification and again, soil conservation and my personal favorite, of course, wildlife habitat. That is exactly what we do. And as far as motivations for why we do them, all the timber sale money that is generated off of the timber harvests on the state forests, that money goes right back into our forest management program. And the forest management program is a comprehensive one. It provides for invasive species management. It provides for recreation. It provides for road maintenance to get folks into the forest so that they can enjoy that and have the pleasurable experience that we're hoping all folks have when they come and visit. There was the question I think touched on public opinion a little bit, and we got a lot of great public opinion from our strategic plan that was out for public review just a little while back. And it's amazing how many folks, you know, the great thing about that is that you get to see what people are using the forest for. And forest recreation is a really big part of our state forest. And it's only because the timber harvest program that we can provide such a great experience for folks like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andy, you still there?
Yeah, Bob, I'd like to ask Scott a question if I could.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
And I appreciate what Scott is saying, because sort of reading between the lines, and forgive me, Scott, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it does sound like you're saying there are a lot of things that the public expects from these forests. The state legislature doesn't give us the money to do them. Basically, the only way we can get enough money to fulfill what we see as our larger mission is by looking at to an available revenue source, which is cutting down the trees. But that does present the problem that a lot of the public that does want to use the forest for recreation goes to their favorite recreation area and finds a clear cut. But the question I wanted to ask you was about the role the long-term planning that the Division of Forestry is doing and to what extent climate change is now being factored into management planning, because we see invasive species, as you mentioned, certainly a warming, increased pollution and particulate matter in the atmosphere, which are contributing. And burning programs and clearing of forest cover seem like they are counter to what long-term management scenario that includes the major changes that are coming our way with a shifting climate and shifting weather patterns. It seems like we need to be managing the forest to protect the largest possible pool of plant animal species rather than favoring the early successional ones or the ones that respond well to disturbance, which is what you get in following logging and logging roads. The invasive species are very, very fond of the logging roads.
Okay, Andy, before I let Scott answer that, we're going to have to take a break. So if you could do me this favor and ask that question very succinctly so we'll remember as soon as we come out of the break what you want answered.
I'd be glad to. You want me to wait to do that when we come back?
No, just go ahead and tell me right now.
What are the long-term management implications of climate change?
Okay, great. Perfect. Okay, thanks a lot, Andy. We appreciate the call. All right. Our phone numbers again, 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu is our email address. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. If you're a person on the go, you can take WFIU programs with you. We're podcasting. Podcasting is a convenient and easy way to download audio files directly to your computer. Listen anytime from your computer, iPod, or portable player. You can download podcasts of full-length programs like Noon Edition, Ask the Mayor, and Harmonia, or short features like Kinsey Confidential, the Ether Game musical mini-quiz, and movie, play, and opera reviews. You can find out how with a visit to our website at wfiu.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg from the Herald Times. Mary Catherine Carmichael cannot be with us today. We have three great guests, and we're talking about stewardship of Indiana's woodlands. Joining me in the studio are the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tim Maloney, the wildlife specialist in the Division of Forestry at the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, Scott Holton, and Christina Glasser, who is the – and she's an economist, and she's also co-founder of Greenfire Consulting, which is a group that puts economic wisdom into decision-making when it comes to environmental issues. So if you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And I should also thank Andy Mahler for being with us. Andy from Heartwood asked some good questions, and he left us with one about the long-term impact of climate change on forests. And Scott?
Yeah, and it's not an easy one either. Well, I feel a little bit of pressure to address the issue of climate change definitively, but the whole comprehensive forest management is long-term management. And there was a comment earlier, some comments earlier about the need for public lands, and I agree wholeheartedly with that sentiment. That's one of the benefits of public land is that we have long-term ownership. Because this management takes a while to express itself over a period of time. Climate change, it's – in one way, it's what brought the oaks here thousands of years ago after the ice sheets pulled back. Warming temperatures over 5,000 years ago, perhaps 10,000 years ago, brought oak species back into this region. And to where they were when the first Native Americans started settling in this region, and of course when the European Americans from out east started making their way out. And so on the one hand, one might, if they were to take a real simplistic view, say, you know, geez, maybe it'll bring more oaks here. Maybe it'll bring more pines. If we look to the south, to the forest types to the south of us in Kentucky and Tennessee, those oak pine cover types, rather than the oak hickory cover types that we have up here, perhaps they'll move more north. And at this point, it's anybody's guess. And that's climate change, of course, is a relatively new and extremely complex and global issue that I don't think we can address as far as long-term planning. We try to plan ahead as far as we can, and of course the crystal ball gets pretty foggy if you don't have the data to make statements with any confidence.
Okay. Now, I will tell you, our panelists, both Tim and Christina, have a lot of things they want to say, but we have four callers now waiting to talk to us. So let's go to the first caller. It's Steve. Steve, and you've been very patient, so thanks for waiting.
Well, thank you for accepting my call here. It's been very interesting, and I just want to say that as a caller, the concept is interesting. I'm a consulting forester myself, so I want to weigh in a little bit and just ask a couple questions. First, a quick comment on the forest plan, though. I had a chance to look at it and review it, and assessments before.
Oh, you're cutting out, Steve. We're going to have to go away from Steve. Maybe he can call back on a landline or get a better connection. So let's go next to Dave. Dave?
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've got two questions. You know, we've sat here and listened through this discussion, and we understand that logging costs the state money and that the overwhelming majority of the population is against this logging. Given all of that, do you guys, and I'm talking to the whole panel here, consider the state of Indiana to be good stewards of our forest land? And then the other question is, if they aren't, and I'm interested in leaving forest land to someone, what group would you recommend? Thank you very much.
Tim, you want to start?
Well, the disagreement for many people with the Department of Natural Resources and Management of Forests is over its management strategies. Certainly, as a their role as a long-term owner of the forests in public ownership is, I think, a positive thing. But we often find ourselves in disagreement over the level of management, the intensity of management, and here particularly with the greatly increased level of logging. So that is, I think, a great cause for concern, and if, you know, would be something to take into account for someone who is, you know, leaving forest land to another owner. So
that would be like Sycamore Valley Land Trust, something like that?
Be it a private land trust,
private
right?
Land trust.
Yeah.
Okay. Christina, you want to try that next?
Well, I think I pretty much agree with what Tim said. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have much to add to it. Certainly, I don't think that the Indiana State Forest or the Hoosier National Forest are necessarily managed right now to the highest public benefit. That's what we found out for the Wayne National Forest. By the way, we've also done work on the Hoosier National Forest before.
Christina, before you go on, could you locate the Wayne National Forest for us? I mean, how much land is it and where is it?
It has about 230,000 acres, and it's located in the southeast part of Ohio.
Okay.
So it's if you can picture where Athens would be, mm-hmm. it's about in that area.
Okay. And how does that size compare to the Hoosier?
I think they're pretty similar.
Pretty much the same.
If I remember, I'm not quite sure. Does anyone know the Hoosier size?
It's around 200,000 acres.
So, yeah, they're not that far apart. And the Wayne National Forest also is separated in 2-3 parts that are actually not even connected.
Okay.
So the Hoosier has similar patterns.
Okay. All right. Do you have anything else you wanted to add? I'm sorry I broke in there.
I think that possibly a private holder with a mission to protect the forest for the public good might do a better job. I don't know. I haven't really thought much about that.
Okay.
Well, of course, I may have a biased opinion, but I do think the Division of Forestry does a very good job at land stewardship. We need to put things in perspective here. We need to turn the clock back to the 100 years ago and remember what these landscapes looked like when they were acquired by the Division of Forestry, or in a lot of cases sold at bargain prices because folks wanted to get rid of them pretty quick. They had been grazed over incredibly heavy. They had been deforested using non-silvicultural methods, very poor, I hesitate to call them forestry practices. They had been cleared for agriculture, and for the last 100 years, the Division of Forestry has been working very hard to restore these forest lands. There are well, if you look at our environmental assessment, there are over 138 species of conservation need that are found or have been found within our forest land. And they find habitat. These are a lot of these forest lands have very unique habitats associated with them, and it's I would question whether if we didn't have these forests and they weren't managed as they were for the last 100 years, if we really would have these habitats available for these species of wildlife that are finding homes here where they wouldn't be able to find homes elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Christina.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Scott that the public forests here have done a great job in restoring very much damaged land. But I think one way in which we can make sure that the public forests are geared towards the highest benefits for society is that there is a structured public input. And with regard to the Indiana state forests, that's not necessarily guaranteed. There is a national law, the National Environmental Policy Act, that was also adopted in Indiana, and the Division of Forestry has exempted itself from that. And this act makes sure that there is, if it's patterned after the national act, that there is structured public input. Now, that doesn't necessarily lead to the best results, as we can see with the Hoosier National Forest and the Wayne National Forest, but it's better than exempting, which the Indiana Department of Resources has done, the Forestry Division from that, and therefore basically having no framework for what they're doing.
Okay. I don't know if Scott wants to respond to that or not.
Sure. It's true that the Division of Forestry has a categorical exemption from the need to produce an environmental assessment. We took the measure to do so because the division is – I don't want to call it a change, but it's undergoing a bit of a turn here. There have been I think Christina alluded to it earlier that there is a very regional and very real concern over losses of forest type in very essential forest habitats. And I'm talking about the oak hickory cover type, which is a very dominant cover type throughout southern Indiana and much of the Midwest. The Division of Forestry is very concerned about this. This has been a very regional concern for decades. And we are looking at our program and looking ahead to the future and making sure that we can maintain this cover type, this forest type on our properties. To do so would require some retooling and shifting some focus on some of our management techniques. And we realize that there's a lot of concern about these techniques, and we wanted to make sure that people understood that we had taken a very comprehensive look at the forest communities on our state forests, plant species and animal species, and not to mention all the other resources, the recreation resources and some of the cultural resources that we manage for as well, to really take a close look at that and see if this, again, for lack of a better phrase, this new direction will produce long-term cumulative impacts on these species. And so that's what the environmental assessment was all about.
Okay. Christina, very quickly, because we have four callers that want to get on. So
yeah, I just wanted to say that and repeat what I said earlier, that there is no justification really for wanting to maintain a certain forest cover. And especially if this forest cover, the oak hickory, has come about as both the Hoosier National Forest Plan, the Wayne National Forest Plan, and the Indiana EAA State has come about because of heavy human intervention. I just want to say a parallel to that would be if you had a grassy area, lawn area, which is a very unnatural occurrence, and it's only being maintained because it's always cut to the level of like 2 inches of size of the grass. And then you would say, oh, there's certain species associated with that, and we'll have to make sure that that is maintained. Mm-hmm. And the forests have a way to develop over time. Oak hickories are trees that naturally occur, especially in dry areas on dry ridge tops, and they will not disappear from that because that's their most preferred habitat. And so, again, I want to make sure that to state that there is no ecological justification that I've ever seen that holds up for wanting to maintain a certain percentage of oaks and hickories.
Okay. Now, mm-hmm. Scott, one last comment on that.
I know you get a lot of callers. I just wanted to throw in that you know, the analogy to a lawn is you know, for somebody who
I know it's extreme.
Well, I know. As a wildlife ecologist, I wish it was so simple as that kind of system. Yeah, These are incredibly complex systems, obviously, and I just wanted to make the point that if folks are looking for more information on what the Division of Forestry is doing, I know we're kind of running out of time here, to go to our website. Our environmental assessment, if you haven't already seen it, is posted. And there's a rather long treatise on the oak hickory issue and why the Division of Forestry is doing what we're doing. So.
Okay, Tim, very quick.
Well, just one comment to this is that there is a lot of scientific concern out there about the oak hickory component in our forests, but what certainly is there's no definite evidence that such a huge increase in logging is the way to address that or to maintain whatever might be a reasonable mix of forest stand diversity.
Okay. Well, this is a lot of give and take, and unfortunately, I have to give Scott now
okay.
another chance.
Well,
no,
I heard
not
that,
unfortunately, but just to be fair.
Well, I heard the increase, and I have to make a point. There's been a lot of play in the press and the media, whatnot, over the last few months about the increase. However, I've yet to see anything about absolute terms. As a point of comparison, I could say that I'm 500% bigger than I used to be in 1970. But, in 1970 I was a toddler and now I'm an adult. And I think that puts things in perspective. It's not quite so shocking. I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that the Division of Forestry in the 10 years prior to 2004 – was harvesting at 0.2 of 1% of the trees in the forest that were greater than 11 inches in diameter. And now after such this huge increase that we have gone through, we are harvesting approximately 1% of the trees. So I have yet to see evidence of 1% harvest across 150,000 plus acres of forest land, how this is going to create a lot of the catastrophes that we've heard in regard to this
okay.
increase.
All right. Now, as with the debate, after the next question, you can answer whatever question you want, Christina. But we have to go to Steve. So, Steve, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thanks
for coming back.
Again.
Sure.
Real quickly, the premise of managing the state forest for oak hickory I find kind of interesting. About 20 years ago, I worked with a state forest pest specialist, and we did modeling on the oak hickory forest, but the forest in general, for risk to gypsy moth. Now, the conclusion was that unless we managed state forests, at that time, the particular state forest we were looking at was Jackson, Washington, to reduce the oak hickory component, that the forest stood at a great deal of risk of loss. My question for the fellow Scott over there from the DNR is more or less, have you considered the threat of gypsy moth? We've sprayed within this past year in two locations in southern Indiana for gypsy moth. Thank you. I'll take my
okay.
comments there.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Yes. Oh, definitely. The threat of gypsy moth has been a threat for a number of years, and I'm not an entomologist, and so I can't get into it too much in detail, and we don't have a lot of time. But it's certainly a concern, and that's, again, forest management is a long-term endeavor. The problem here is, do we not have enough oak, or do we have enough oak, mature oaks out there on the landscape? The problem is that we don't see regeneration under these stands, that we don't see the next forest underneath there. And I think if you put it in the context of, say, a species like the gypsy moth, which could have devastating, severely devastating effects on our oak hickory forests, it draws into question what would the next forest look like. So that's exactly what the Division of Forestry is trying to do, is to prepare for the long-term maintenance of this forest type.
Okay. We have 2 minutes to go. We have two callers. Anmar, go ahead.
Thank you. I own 150 acres down near Williams, and I've Dolph Woods, and I live out here, and it's great. What I've noticed, though, from the state, and I'm going to give the state kudos on this one, is they actually do a management plan, and they do seek the public input. As mentioned earlier, the vast majority of forest land in Indiana is under private ownership, and I've dealt with the forest products industry and loggers and the state foresters, and what I've noticed is that they're really out to try and push timber, especially in the private industry. You don't get a lot of support for people who want to manage the forest as a whole ecosystem. It's very difficult to find resources both from the state and on a private level to do that. I'd like the panel to address that.
All right. Who wants to go? Who wants to go first?
Well, I could probably address part of it.
Got to keep it short.
Oh, geez. Well, we do have district foresters, of course, that serve the public in providing management alternatives. And a big part of their program is to discuss with landowners objectives for wildlife that they might have on properties. And so that resource is available if you haven't sought it already.
Okay. We only have 1 minute to go. And so we're not going to get to LaDonna. I have to apologize to LaDonna. But I have an email, and I think this might be a short answer question. Do you all agree that for steep ravine forests of south central Indiana that limited and selected hardwood harvesting with draft horses would be a sustainable use of that land? Anybody want to address that?
Well, maybe I'll answer it by saying I'm not a forester, so I really can't address that. But I do know I'm originally from New England, and draft horses certainly do have a place in small forest woodlots.
All right. We could have gone on for a long time, but we are out of time. I apologize for not getting to all the questions and all the answers that you wanted to give. But I want to thank Tim Maloney and Scott Holton and Christina Glosser for being here with us today. You guys were great. For Ariana Prothero and engineer Mike Pashkash, I'm Bob Salzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.